A film studio lot is reflected in the polished surface of a gold shield with the letters WB in the center. It hangs against a blue sky backdrop, the logo of Warner Brothers Pictures, a Time Warner company. Light twinkles between a series of metallic Vs stacked within each other. Village Roadshow Pictures. Credits appear against barcode-like vertical lines.
Warner Brothers Pictures presents... In association with Village Roadshow Pictures.
Between the barcode lines, surveillance camera footage appears.
A Beacon Pictures stroke John Shestack stroke Thunder Road production.
A family get on a pleasure boat on a lake.
A Richard Longcrane film.
A clean-shaven man of about 60 is at the helm of the boat.
Harrison Ford. Paul Bettany. Firewall.
I got it.
Now wearing a suit, the man leaves a house.
Virginia Madsen, Marilyn Radskoob, Robert Patrick.
The man gets in a Chrysler 300 saloon. As he drives off, his license plate is photographed.
Arlie Schroeder, Jimmy Bennett. With Robert Forster and Alan Arkin.
The man drives into a city.
Vincent Gale, Ket Turton. Nikolai Koster-Waldau, Vince Vieluff.
The man walks down a city street clutching a cup of coffee. He breaks into a trot. A pizza is delivered and two women take delivery of it.
Music by Alexandre Desplat.
Rubbish is sifted through.
Co-producer Tobin Armbrust. Edited by Jim Page. Production designer Brian Morris.
A series of photos zooming in on the man sitting in an office.
Director of Photography, Marco Pontecorvo, AIC.
Control the flow of traffic.
Produced by Armian Bernstein. Produced by Jonathan Shestack, Basil Ivanik.
An ID photo of the man under surveillance. Someone scrutinizes a receipt.
Written by Joe Fort, directed by Richard Longcrane.
The man stands in some bushes as a woman walks by with a pale, long-haired terrier.
Hello, Jack.
His photo's taken. The dog chews a remote control car.
Andy, stop it. Andy! Tell Andy to get that thing out of here. It's screwing up the TV.
Idiot. Andy, we'll help you.
Okay. Moron.
Idiot moron.
Moron idiot. Nobody's an idiot. Nobody's a moron. Andy, stop it. I'm trying to watch this.
Those two home together all week.
No school till Monday.
Oh, boy. What's your day like?
Well, I've got to finish the details on the Morgan house because they're pouring the footings today.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have to find a guitar teacher for Sarah, pay some bills, and schlepping kids.
You should get yourself a hobby, keep yourself busy.
Oh, I already have a hobby.
Yeah?
And it's taking care of you.
Huh. I don't deserve you.
No, you don't.
Rio Island and V at dinner. Want to do it this week?
Well, they're home this week. I just want to be with the kids.
Andy! Mom!
Really?
The man, Jack, walks into the kitchen.
Yes, it is.
I don't care if I like you. Go play somewhere else.
I don't want it.
Marcy's in Manila till the 25th.
I can't explain.
Just for a second.
Mom, excuse me. Does anybody care?
Go put this in my office. Well, yeah, I'll show you how we can fix it tonight, okay? And yes, I do care. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Jack.
Bye, Dad.
Bye, Andy. Don't torture your sister. Sarah, this dog needs to go out. Don't forget his new collar. Sarah.
Bye, Jack.
Teenage Sarah eats breakfast cereal. Jack drives his Chrysler out onto the freeway.
So we're getting a welcome break of the weather today before getting hit by a couple of storms heading our way. That'll make the drive a little more difficult. Looks Looks like smooth sailing this morning, though, heading into downtown Seattle. We've been seeing the slowdown to heavy traffic just about everywhere else.
Jack drives down the freeway into the skyscrapers of Seattle. Workmen move a sign which reads Landrock Pacific Bank. Jack's car drives past them and disappears into an underground car park. Clutching a briefcase, Jack walks across the bank's spacious lobby and goes over to an elevator where he greets the security guard.
Morning, Richard.
A younger woman.
Morning, Jack.
How are you?
Great.
In an office.
How do I say this, Bobby? No.
Come on, Janet, I don't see why not.
Look, Bobby, here's how this works. You ask me out, which you did. I say no, which I did. And you say okay, and you go ask somebody else. You don't keep asking me.
So at what point does it become sexual harassment?
What about now, Bobby?
Mr. Stanfield.
Good morning, boss.
Kid's persistent.
I don't know why.
Usual reason, I suppose.
Have you seen Ravi yet?
No, I'm on my way now, though.
Don't forget, merger meeting.
Jack grimaces.
Nice flowers.
Born again, Bobby.
Maybe he's trying to save your soul.
You need bigger blossoms than that.
Jack steps out of an elevator and goes over to a door marked Authorized Personnel Only. He opens it and goes up to a middle-aged black woman at a computer.
Morning, Betty.
Morning.
How are we doing?
Pike Street system's running slow. I'll tell Carol when she gets in. We'll get after it.
Merger goes through and we get some budget. We'll go and replace the whole thing.
Yeah.
Jack walks away.
Morning, sir.
Good morning, Rick.
He joins a man at a desk.
Hey, Robbie. What have we got?
Brute force login. The interesting thing is, even though he's coming in through Hong Kong, Korea, and Malaysia, he's trying sequential account numbers. He's hacking all over the board.
Jack types on the keyboard.
Well, let's try a rule change on him. See what he does. Put in an IPS signature that black holes the pattern. See if that slows him down.
That'd slow me down. I'd be resistant to false positives, too.
Yep.
Thanks.
Later, Janet goes into a glass-walled office where a meeting is taking place. She hands Jack a message.
Well, it depends on how you view the statistics. They're not particularly high, given the fact that we're pushing the business into some new and uncharted areas. Online banking is where the business is heading.
Where we have our branches, we'll be able to provide our customers with more ways to control their money. Well, as you can see by the chart, after the merger, AccuWest will have 1,100 branches in 13 states with over $100 billion in assets. So to answer your question, Harry, yes, we do see a reasonable level of fraud loss as a cost of doing business. But you're a small bank. How many branches do you have?
27.
So as head of network security, Jack, you've never really had to think in terms of economies of scale. But at the end of the day, your philosophy of risk
is... Wait a second, Gary. Make this clear for me, will you? What exactly is my philosophy of risk?
Jack, there's no need to take this personally.
Of course I take it personally. God damn it, I spent 20 years trying to protect this bank, its customers, its shareholders from unnecessary risk.
Jack, I don't think you're hearing what I'm saying.
Oh, I hear what you're saying, Gary. Fraud loss is inevitable. Pass it on to the customers at the cost of doing business. Well, we don't want to do that, do we?
Gary shifts. An older man's at the head of the table.
Come on, we're all here to serve the customers. Let's try and get along. We can have the best of both worlds.
Doesn't exist, Arlen.
Jack gets up.
Look, I'm sorry this went on a little longer than I anticipated. There's stuff I really have to get to.
Jack and Harry go.
Okay, let's get on with it.
Network attacks, network activity.
Jack walks across an open-plan office to Janet's desk.
Where is this guy?
He's in reception. He said it's personal. Should I get him?
I'll walk over there.
He goes into reception where a stocky, middle-aged man is waiting.
Mr. Stanfield, Mr. Hughes.
Hughes approaches Jack and they shake hands.
Jack Stanfield, Mr. Hughes. Do I know you?
I know you.
Do you have a card?
Hughes hands him a business card.
DHD Financial, what can I do for you?
You can give me the $95,000 you owe me.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Hmm? I'm collecting for GambleNet USA. Does that ring a bell?
No, it doesn't.
You racked up 95 grand in online wagers, and I got the paperwork to prove it.
You got the wrong Jack Stanfield. I don't gamble. I don't have any debt. Check your facts next time.
You're a deadbeat. I'll see you in court.
Lori, call security.
Don't bother, sweetheart. Gambling's an addiction, Mr. Stanfield. Get some help.
Gary has overheard this conversation and stares after Jack, who walks back to his desk. On his computer, Jack types in Equifax and connects to a website. He clicks on a menu heading in account information marked Collections. He frowns as he sees a column marked balance owed, $95,000. Harry walks past Janet's desk.
Yes, but if you do that, then
nice flowers. Bobby?
That would be the wrong thing to do, don't you think?
Janet bins the flowers.
What's up, partner? Take a look at this.
Jack shows Harry the website.
Wow. Who are you betting on?
I'm betting on anybody. I don't gamble.
I don't even know how.
Well, that's obvious.
You think somebody got my information off the bank's internal network or what?
Are you doubting yourself in your old age? No. More likely a dumpster diver, somebody sifting through your trash.
Maybe. Debt collector showed up this morning about it.
Don't worry about this. I'll clean it up. It's just a pain in the ass. Bill Cox, guy from Atlanta, supposed to have a drink tonight?
I can do 5:30. Want to get home early, pizza night.
Good. I'll let him know.
Okay.
Harry goes and Jack phones home. His wife, Beth, picks up the phone next to her computer.
Hey, you.
Hi, hon. Harry and I need to see a guy for a few minutes after work. It'd be okay if I'm a little late.
What are you thinking?
I don't know, 45 minutes tops.
Oh. All right, we'll see you when we see you. Love you.
Love you too, bye.
That evening, Jack and Harry walk into a smart, busy bar.
I see. My question is this. Do we really want to work for those AccuWest morons?
I'll listen to what the man has to say.
This guy could be our future.
Okay.
Bill.
Good to see you, Harry.
Bill Cox. Jack Hi. Stanfield.
How are you?
I've been looking forward to meeting you. Please, sit down.
Thank you.
At home, Beth's at a drawing desk, working on architectural plans.
Sarah, the pizza's here. My wallet's by the door.
She continues working on her drawings.
Is somebody going to get that?
She puts her pen down. In the bar...
Here you go.
So listen, I don't know how much Harry's told you about what I do.
Not a lot. Just that you're in banking.
Yeah, I have a company that provides banking support services, mainly in the South. But really, I'm an old-fashioned entrepreneur.
At home, the kids are watching TV.
That's a scary movie. Turn it off. Your brother won't be able to sleep for a week.
Beth opens the door to the pizza guy. The pizza guy and several other men burst into the house.
There's over 200 regional banks in the U.S. alone that have nothing like the sophistication of the system you developed for Lamrock.
The men handcuff Beth and grab Sarah.
With your system software and Harry's expertise in law enforcement and the physical security, I think you're an unbeatable team.
Hey, come here!
A man grabs Andy.
Be your own bosses. I'll just supply the money.
Daughter, my children.
Shut up!
Oh my God, what do you want?
I have to think about a couple of other options, but it sounds like a very attractive proposition.
Okay, good.
Beth and the kids are photographed using a cell phone.
Hey, listen, I hate to break this up, but I gotta get home.
Family man.
How many kids do you have? I didn't
ask. Oh, two. Boy, 8, girl, 14.
Wow.
Sure you don't need a ride, Bill?
No, thanks, Harry. I'm fine.
Going back tonight?
No, I've got some business here in town.
Well, great meeting you. Take care.
Harry leaves in a taxi. Jack shakes hands with Cox, then dashes through the rain across the street to his car and gets in. As he puts on his seatbelt, the back door opens and Cox gets in behind him.
She has beautiful eyes, your daughter.
Cox shows him the picture of Sarah on his phone.
Jesus.
Cox pulls a gun.
What do you want? I want to get you home. It's pizza night. Drive. Drive.
Bewildered and concerned, Jack starts the car. As they pull away into the slow-moving traffic, Cox makes a call on his cell phone.
Liam, we're on our way. Everything all right?
Fine, the house is secure. Are we setting up now?
I want to talk to my wife.
Did you hear that, Liam? He wants to talk to his wife.
He can't talk right now.
She's busy.
Alarmed, Jack glances in his rearview mirror and continues driving. The vehicle mingles with the other traffic on the dark, rain-drenched Seattle streets. Liam and his men bring holdalls full of equipment into Jack's house and begin to set it up. Flat-screen monitors are unpacked, together with other electrical equipment. The vehicle travels through an underpass, and Jack glances in the rearview mirror at Cox, who's in his 30s, clean-shaven, with fair hair.
Who are you? What's this about? What do you want from me?
Cox stares straight ahead, giving nothing away. At Jack's house, Cox's colleagues continue setting up their surveillance equipment. Video cameras are installed around the house and their feeds beamed through to a laptop, which one of the men operates. In the car, Cox looks out of the window.
This is your exit, Jack.
Apprehensive, Jack turns off the freeway. In his house, the men disconnect the phone and put a stack of oven-ready meals in the fridge. A set of kitchen knives is thrown into a briefcase and shut away. The Chrysler drives down a quiet road and arrives outside Jack's driveway. A set of automatic gates slide open and the car drives through. Inside, the men watch its arrival. The TV's on.
They're here.
Vel, who's set up the computer screens, watches them get out of the car. Another of the gang, Pim, opens the door. Jack pauses as he sees Pim with an assault rifle, then passes by. Inside, Jack strides down a long hallway, followed by Cox and Pim. Jack looks anxious as he enters the kitchen.
Where are they?
Through here.
Jack walks through to a seating area just beyond the kitchen. He sees his family bound and gagged.
Jesus. What is this? Why have you done this, for God's sake?
He rips off their gags.
They're children.
I said if they were trouble, were they trouble?
They were noisy.
Yes, we made an executive decision.
It's all right. It's all right. You're a criminal, Willie, not an executive.
Yeah, but I thought you said if...
Shut up, Willie.
Daddy.
I want to know what you want. And I want to know now.
Beth, I'm sorry about all of this. I am, but, well, there we are. I need you to talk to your husband. He listens to you. I need you to make him understand that if he doesn't do exactly as I ask, I will kill you and your two children. But if you can make him listen, Beth, if you can make him do what I want, you'll all walk away from this unpleasantness unscathed. Not because I'm a nice man. Simply because there'll be no reason for me to hurt you.
Jack and Beth exchange a worried look. Cox stares at Beth.
Makes sense.
Beth, sitting beside Sarah, nods her head.
Can I rely on your cooperation?
Yes, I told him yes.
Yes.
Sarah.
Hi.
And you, big fella?
Maybe.
Andy.
No, it's all right. It's honest. Keep a gun in the house, Jack.
Andy's on Jack's knee.
No.
Liam strikes Jack.
Oh, Daddy!
Okay. Don't worry.
It's okay.
Liam tosses down a gun.
Pass me the gun. It's empty.
Jack hands the gun to Cox and glares at him.
You lied to me, Jack. Don't let it happen again.
Jack holds a tissue to his head.
You have an excellent alarm system in this house. What are alarms for, Andy?
Keep people out.
That's right. And they also keep people in. I'll need the password, Jack.
Lark.
Cox leans closer.
Lark. It's the name of our boat.
All right. Untie them.
Cox rises as Pim roughly pushes Andy and cuts through his bonds.
Take it easy.
Pim cuts Beth, then Sarah free. Cox is on the phone.
Hi, this is Jack Stanfield, account number 51216. I need to change our alarm code and give you a new password.
I know it's difficult for you, but try and get some sleep.
Liam faces the family, then turns and walks away. Beth takes a few paces forward and watches him go.
Mom, what's going on? What do they want?
I don't know, sweetheart.
Sarah has her arms over her younger brother's shoulders. Cox removes a meal from the microwave. He turns to face Jack.
You want something to eat, Jack?
Jack paces in front of the five intruders.
I'm not hungry.
No? Do you have any wine?
There's some in the bar.
Pim, go and get me a nice bottle of red.
I don't know shit about wine, man. I don't know if it's nice.
It'll be dusty.
Beth and the kids are in bed.
I didn't know he had a gun. They hit him so hard. He'll be fine. It's just a little lump on the head.
Young Andy lies between his mother and sister.
Let's think about something nice, okay? I know.
Beth strokes Sarah's hair.
We're on board the Lark. And the sail's up. And the sun is shining. And it's warm. Andy, you're at the wheel with your dad.
Jack, his hands in his pockets, still paces. Cox eats his microwaved meal.
Vel, get Jack a blanket. He's got a busy day tomorrow.
Vel vacates his seat and moves away. Liam, carrying a microwaved meal and a bottle of water, sits down beside Cox. Jack watches the two men. In the bedroom, the two kids are asleep beside Beth. Video feed from a surveillance camera in the bedroom is shown on a screen next to Vel, who's running a computer program. Rows of figures are being processed. Vel has a SIM card. He places it in a cell phone. Beth's eyes close. Vel turns to Liam.
She's asleep. Get some yourself. I'll wake in an hour.
Liam replaces Vel in front of the surveillance screen. Liam glances up and sees Jack sitting alone, his hands clasped together. Night gives way to a wet morning. The Stanfield house is a big modern mansion. It sits on a clifftop overlooking a bay. Jack stands by a window.
Morning, Jack. Time to get ready for work.
Jack's face is haggard. In a dressing room, he puts on a suit and tie. The kids and Beth are awake.
You have to do whatever they want. I don't care what it is.
It may not be that easy. We've seen their faces.
But he said if we just cooperate...
I know what they said, Beth.
Jack squeezes her shoulder as he leads her through into the bedroom.
Where's Andy?
Breakfast.
Count to three.
One, two, three. Whoa!
Andy!
Andy watches Cox tossing a pancake.
This man is not our friend. Stay away from him.
But I want a pancake.
We'll see you, Mom.
Want some Cheerios?
No.
Jack checks the cooking oil.
You worried I'd give him peanut oil, Jack?
Jack stops.
I know about his allergy. Don't imagine for one second that I just blundered in here out of the rain.
Don't touch him. Don't talk to him. And don't feed him anything.
The two men glare at each other. Vel fits a microphone under Jack's tie.
I'm fitting you with two separate systems. Audio transmitter. We hear everything you do.
What do I do when I get to the office?
You do your work, Jack. Chase that American dream.
A pen.
The video camera. The wide-angle lens. We see what you see.
Whoa!
I've cloned your cell phone. Any call that you make or receive, we can monitor.
What about my family?
Oh, they'll be safe. Here with us. Now tuck your shirt in and go to work.
Jack turns somberly. Willie, a bag over his shoulder, opens the front door. Jack waves to Andy.
Bye, pal.
Bye, Dad.
Jack follows Willie out into the rain. Andy stands at the top of a short flight of stairs, his mother and sister behind him. A Chevy-paneled van driven by Willie pulls in behind Jack's Chrysler. He spots it in the rearview mirror. Jack continues to drive through the downtown streets.
You're a young man. You don't need to be doing this.
Willie leans on the steering wheel and stares ahead.
the longer it goes on, the deeper in you are. Let's stop it right now, before it gets worse.
In the mirror, Jack sees Willie give him the finger.
Same to you, kid.
Elevator doors open and Jack steps out into his office. The pen camera relays Jack's movements through the office and is monitored by Willie in the van. Willie puts down the magazine he is reading as Jack approaches Janet.
You're gonna love me. You know those tickets I couldn't get? I got them. They're this Sunday at 4 p.m.
I need 5 minutes.
Janet frowns as Jack walks straight past. She sips the top of her cappuccino with a spoon. Jack sits down at his desk in his own office, his back to the glass wall and the traffic down below. He eases his chair left and settles down in front of a flat-screen PC. Jack places his hands on the desk, then glances down at the pen in his top pocket. Sitting in the van in the rain, Willie sees on his monitor the glass wall and the buildings opposite. In the office, Jack sits awkwardly and reaches round to his right for the telephone.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 16 points.
He inserts a swipe card into the keyboard beside him. The PC springs to life. The telephone still to his ear and the pen still pointing outside, Jack types an email to Harry. Family kidnapped. No police. Don't call me. Jack watches wide-eyed as the cursor starts to delete the message. The cursor types, I thought we had a deal, Jack. Jack hangs up, then twists round in his chair and looks around the office. He gets to his feet and gazes down at the traffic below. Seeing the van, Jack takes hold of the mic.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Willie stares up at him.
Can you hear me? Tell your boss I want to speak to him. Tell him to quit dicking me around and tell me what he wants me to do. Can you hear me?
Jack? Are you okay?
Janet's in the doorway.
Yes, I'm just talking to myself. What's it?
Arlen wants to see you.
She leaves his office. Jack turns away from the window and follows her out of the door. Back at the house, Vel approaches Beth in the kitchen. She tenses as he walks behind her.
So you're an architect?
Yes.
And you designed this house?
I did.
Liam listens in.
It's nice.
Thanks.
How old is it?
7 years.
How much does a house like this go for?
This is about robbing the bank, isn't it? You're using Jack to help you rob the bank.
Open a few doors and press a few buttons.
Just look after the kids, Beth. And Vel, stick to your work.
Vel glances across at Liam, then walks away. Beth lays the top back on the hob. Jack's in Arlen's office.
I need you to try and get along with this guy.
Arlen, I'm tired of him patronizing me. Gary is an idiot.
Be that as it may, he's a fact of life, on top of which you may be working for him in a couple of weeks.
Okay, I'll take care of it.
Jack, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
And Beth and the kids?
You're fine, Arlen.
Listen, Jack, Gary doesn't like you very much, and based on your performance at the meeting yesterday, it's not too hard to understand why. Also, we had a debt collector here yesterday asking questions about you. What was that all about?
Arlen, somebody compromised my identity and ran up $95,000 worth of online gambling debt. Harry's taking care of it. You know me. I don't gamble. I don't have any debt.
Talk to Gary now. I want this merger to go smoothly.
I can't today.
Today, Jack.
Okay. I'll take care of it. Thanks.
Are we on for dinner next week?
Jack pauses by the door.
Yeah, let me check with Beth.
Gary Mitchell's with a subordinate.
Looks good. Get it out there.
As Gary walks away, Jack spots him and catches him up.
Gary.
Oh, yeah, Jack. Need some?
Yeah, I just wanted to have a word. If I seemed like I was a little abrupt or
difficult yesterday. I want to apologize. I want you to know I am committed to this process and just having a bad day, that's all.
You seem a little stressed out. Is everything okay?
Yeah, just that's fine, Gary. Thank you.
You sure?
Yeah.
We can make this merger work for everyone's benefit. I'm here to help. If you ever do have a problem, my door is always open. Thank you, Gary.
Gary watches as Jack passes Janet on his way back to his office. She glances up as Jack enters his office. Jack pauses, touches his breast pocket, then turns to face his secretary.
Janet, come in here for a second, will you? We'll do some letters.
Jack faces the wall of glass as Janet walks up beside him. He slips an arm round her shoulder.
Janet, if I've been difficult or distant for the last couple of days, I hope you understand. I apologize.
That's okay.
Between you and me. And I want you to understand how much I appreciate what you do for me.
Thanks, Jack.
It means the world to me.
He attaches the pen to her lapel.
Sometimes I think I just need to.
He moves round behind her.
Relax.
Okay.
Take a minute.
Okay.
Take 5 minutes out of the day and just sit quietly and take a break. No, just...
Sure. Jack.
He sits her down facing the window. In the van, Willie sees the camera's unchanged output. Jack walks out.
He's lost him. Completely lost him.
Letter to Scott Smith. Dear Scott, pursuant to your request for further information regarding the security interface issues, unfortunately, the information that you request is not available at this time. Sorry.
He strides to Harry's office, pretending to dictate a letter.
Shit.
It's empty.
Strike that.
Harry's in L.A. for a convention.
Thanks for coming to tell me that. I can refer you.
Harry's PA looks puzzled as Jack trots away. In the main office, he bumps into Janet.
Jack?
Willie's drinking coffee in the van.
Jack, I've been looking for you.
Shit.
There's a Bill Redman here to see you.
Shit.
Who?
Bill Redman. From the Federal Banking Board.
I didn't talk to anybody federal.
Jack Stanfield?
It's Cox.
Bill Redman. Pleased to meet you.
Cox shakes Jack's hand.
Janet, close the door, please.
Janet shuts the door.
Look, Jack.
Cox opens his cell phone.
Liam, take the boy downstairs and break his knee.
Don't do that. It's my fault, not his. It's my mistake. Don't take it out on the boy. Please. Please don't.
Liam, leave him be for now.
Jack, standing immediately in front of Cox, watches the younger man close his cell phone.
Like a tour of the bank now, Jack.
Jack stands frozen as Cox walks out.
I'm sorry, I have a terrible memory. What was your name again?
Janet Stone.
Janet, can I borrow a pen?
Sure.
That one will do. I just need to write them down once and then they stick.
I'm surprised I didn't know about your meeting. Who actually set it up?
It's a last minute thing, Janet. I forgot to tell you. I'm going to give Mr. Redman a tour of the bank.
Thanks.
I'll find you if I need you.
Janet purses her lips as the two men walk away. They enter a secured area and cross to a girl behind a clear glass screen.
Good morning, Mr. Stanfield.
Morning, Wendy. I have a guest, Mr. Redman.
Hi.
Hi.
Wendy slides a pass card into the opening under the glass. Jack hands it to Cox.
Open sesame.
Wendy speaks into a microphone and presses a button. The two men walk through an open door and wait at another door. Jack and Cox step into the vault. A balding man nods to Jack.
If there was so much plastic around, there wouldn't be any need for this real money.
The room is full of cash in wire cages. They walk over to a metal door. Behind it is more cash and gold bullion. A surveillance camera is positioned on the wall.
How long do they keep the images from those cameras?
15 days.
They step out of the vault and Jack slides the security pass back to Wendy in the glass-fronted booth by the door.
Thank you.
Jack follows Cox over to the elevator.
How do you expect to get in and out of here?
I don't.
Looking bewildered, Jack follows Cox into the elevator. Jack and Cox step out of the elevator onto a floor crammed with computer servers and equipment. Cox wanders round it.
This is the real vault, isn't it, Jack?
Binary code. Virtual money. Tell me, how can it be stealing if you can't even touch it?
Jack walks up to Cox.
That's it. This is your plan? You think your schoolboy techie friend can hack into these servers? This is what you kidnapped my family for?
I don't need to hack into anything. We're already inside. All we need to do is plug in. You're going to log onto a maintenance terminal and run a prioritized search selecting the accounts of your 10,000 richest customers. And then with the program on this, you'll withdraw $10,000 from each and transfer the money to my offshore accounts.
$100 million, wow. That's a lot of money. That's a good plan.
Thanks, we like it.
At least it was last week. Look around.
Do you see any maintenance terminals to plug into, huh?
The bank that took us over had them removed. There's nothing accessible from this room anymore.
Not from this building.
You're in the wrong town. You should be in Wichita, Kansas, but...
Cox is unnerved.
You design the software. You find me a way in.
I wouldn't know where to start.
Well, then you have a big fucking problem.
Cox gives Jack a hard look and wanders off, leaving him anxious. Sarah and Beth are cooking.
Looks like someone's done.
Fel sits at the table, fiddling with a computer. At the breakfast bar, Pim sits beside Andy, who's doing some painting. Andy jumps down from his bar stool and carries a glass with his brushes in it over to the sink. He rinses the brushes and the glass under the tap. Everyone looks at the phone. Without thinking, Andy picks it up.
Andy!
Fel grabs Andy. Beth runs over to him.
Let him go!
Pim hits Beth.
Okay.
Beth picks up the phone.
Hello. Hi, Tom. No, everything's okay. I just dropped a bottle of milk and it's just made a big mess everywhere. Oh, thanks, but, well, we're all down with the flu. Okay, I gotta... back. Thanks, Tom.
Come on. Are you all right? Okay, you're okay.
Don't you ever touch my children again, do you hear me?
Shut your goddamn mouth. From now on, you do as you're told!
Fel looks on uneasily as Pim balls Beth out. Pim had been holding his gun to Sarah's head. Beth picks up Andy and hugs him. Fel looks anxiously away. As Jack drives home from work, he glances in his rearview mirror and sees Willie's van following him. He suddenly pulls over to the hard shoulder in a tunnel, and the panel van pulls in behind him. Jack gets out of his car. He slams the door and marches purposefully back to the van.
What are you doing? How much is he paying you?
Get back in the car!
I get you $5 million to get my family out of that house.
Get back in the car, I called Bill.
Their exchange is being watched from another vehicle. The driver is Cox.
There are traps in the system, Willie. He's gonna get caught. You're all gonna get caught, Willie. $5 million,
in the car, I mean it! Get back in the car!
Jack glares at the van driver for a moment, then strides back to his car. Cox pulls away in his car. Unseen, Cox drives past Jack as he gets into his Chrysler. A wet and sullen-looking Cox arrives back at the house. Pim lets him in.
What the hell happened, man?
Nothing.
Exactly. So what's the plan? How we get the money?
You are really beginning to bore me.
Pim pulls a face behind Cox's back, then opens the door to let Jack in.
I want you and your wife downstairs now.
Willie comes in behind Jack. Surveillance footage of Jack, Beth and Cox arriving in the room downstairs. Jack stands with his arm around Beth's shoulders.
How was your day, Beth?
Am I supposed to believe you care?
Willie! Come down here! Jack has broken our agreement and decided not to cooperate. Willie!
What's he talking about?
It's just a game.
No, it's not a game.
Listen to your wife, Jack.
Hey,
Sit down, Willie.
Willie sits down.
So, Willie, what happened today? How did Jack manage to hand over the pen?
I'm not exactly sure. I mean, everything seemed to be fine.
Willie, I told you to watch him.
Yeah, I was watching. Everything was cool. And then all of a sudden...
Listen, Willie. How can I expect Jack to do as he's told if you don't?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I made a mistake. I'm sorry.
Well, we all make mistakes, Willie. Just not as many as you.
Yeah, I said I was sorry.
Cox looks over at Jack and Beth.
All right. Okay, you're sorry.
Willie nods.
Watch them.
Willie turns to look at Jack and Beth. As he turns his back, Cox pulls a gun and shoots him. Stunned, Jack stares at Cox as Willie topples from the chair.
Get out.
Jack ushers Beth past Willie's body. On their way out, they pass Pim on his way in.
What happened?
Clean this mess up.
Through the basement. We gotta
Why?
Get the kids out of here.
Shut up, Al. Don't tell me to shut up. What's
pretend to be watching television, falling asleep. 9 o'clock, I'll divert that.
Now! Okay. Beth, go to the bed.
Jack, over there.
Beth hurries off to the bedroom. Liam gestures to a sofa with his pistol, and Jack sits down. Liam holsters the pistol and walks away. Jack checks his watch and nervously fingers his mouth as he waits. The surveillance cameras show Beth tucking Sarah and Andy up in bed. Rusty the dog sits on the covers.
Okay. Don't really go to sleep, okay?
Okay.
Just pretend to be asleep.
Okay.
This is all going to be over really soon.
Jack sits at his desk, fiddling with the remote controller for Andy's toy car. He checks his watch again.
What are you planning? How are you going to get me my money?
Jack puts the remote control down on the desk.
I don't know yet. I'm working on it.
You've got 12 hours till the bank opens, Jack.
Cox goes and Jack shifts agitatedly in his seat. In the bedroom, Sarah, Andy and Beth are together in bed. Beth looks over at the TV. The sci-fi classic The Forbidden Planet is on. She looks up at the surveillance camera on the wall, its red LED winking. In the kitchen, Vel, Pim and Liam are sitting in front of their security monitors, eating. Jack checks his watch. It's exactly 9 o'clock. He starts Andy's toy car, which is upside down on his desk, creating interference on the monitors. Beth and the kids get up and arrange the pillows in the bed to look like them sleeping. Cox walks over to Vel.
What's going on, Vel?
It's fine. It's just some local interference.
Go check on Jack.
Beth, Sarah and Andy hide. The security screens adjust to snowstorm. Liam looks in on Jack, who's in his study. As he approaches, Jack switches the toy car off and the monitors clear.
Back.
On the monitors, it looks as if Beth and the kids are still in bed. Liam returns to the kitchen.
He's just sitting there.
Jack grabs a fire extinguisher and smashes a window.
Val, you stay here and watch.
Beth, Sarah and Andy hurtle down the stairs into the basement. They get torches and Sarah switches the power to the house off. The lights go out. Beth takes the cover off a ventilation shaft, and Andy climbs into it. As Pim, Liam and Cox come into Jack's office, he lets the fire extinguisher off in their faces. Sarah, Andy and Beth crawl through the shaft. Pim goes into the bedroom and pulls back the quilt.
Guard!
Jack swings at Liam, who thumps him several times.
Liam, we need him.
Cox heads off as Pim runs up from the bedroom.
Not here!
Bell switches the electricity back on. Cox picks up the phone.
Hello? Yes, this is Jack Stanfield.
Liam throws Jack into his chair. Beth reaches a hatch.
You okay?
Cox opens the alarm panel.
I'm sorry if my son opened the door and... Yeah, I know.
Beth and the kids push up on the hatch. A shelving unit on top of the hatch falls.
They're in the garage!
Andy struggles through the hatch.
Go, honey.
Sarah races over to the door switch. Beth charges over to a box and fishes out some keys. As the electric door rises, all three run out into the rain towards the Chrysler. Desperately, they clamber into the car. Pim flies at them. Beth opens her door, knocking him onto his back. Sarah screams as she sees Willie's body on the back seat. Beth looks round at her.
Open the goddamn door now!
Cox, Pim and Vel have the car covered. Weeping, Beth unlocks the car. Vel and Pim manhandle Beth and the kids out of the car and force them back towards the house.
Get him in! Get up!
Vel covers Andy's mouth as he pushes the boy inside. Andy bites him. Anguished Jack tries to get to his feet, but Liam pushes him back down.
Jack! All right! Move! Okay.
Cox turns to Jack.
Let's do this a different way.
And then follows the others. Later, Pim sits in Sarah's bedroom, idly flicking through a magazine while listening to an iPod. Sarah sits on the bed, drying tears, glistening on her reddened cheeks. In her bathroom, Beth is cleaning a cut on her left arm under the tap, watched intently by Vel. She catches his eye as she walks across the room to get a towel. He stares at her unblinkingly. Unnerved, Beth lowers her gaze and walks away from him. In his home office, Jack heaves a fretful sigh. Liam leans against the wall.
We'll find a way in, Jack. That's why we chose you.
Andy's curled up on the sofa.
Hey, you mind if I watch TV?
Cox sits beside him, carrying a mug and a packet of cookies.
Where's my mom?
She's upstairs asleep.
He picks up the remote.
No, she's not.
Cox fiddles with the TV remote.
Where's my dad?
He's in his office working.
Well, can I see him?
Cox picks up a cookie.
No. I know, I'm sorry. I made a rule.
Andy looks up at him.
I'll let you see him in a bit, okay?
Cox turns back to the TV.
Okay.
Good.
The Flintstones is on.
Why have I got no sound? Is it broken?
No, give it to me.
Andy takes the remote and presses a button.
Brandy, why did you give up?
So you're a genius. Thank you.
Cox, wearing gloves, smiles as he watches and sips from his mug. Andy stares miserably at him. Grinning, Cox turns to the sullen boy.
You want a cookie?
Have they got nuts?
Why?
I'm allergic.
I'm sorry, Andy. I didn't know. Let me check.
He studies the red packaging.
No. Not a peanut in sight. You're fine.
Looking back at the TV, he holds the packet out to Andy.
Promise.
Uncertainly, Andy reaches out and takes a cookie. In his home office, Jack swings round slowly on his chair, grinding his teeth, looking away from the two computer screens on his desk. He stares pensively into space, and then looks over at a fax machine. He gets up and walks over to the fax, lifting up the black plastic button panel on top of the machine and flipping it towards him.
Jack! Jack!
Jack swings round. Liam stares impassively at him. Jack runs to the main room where Beth's crouched over a motionless Andy.
He's going into shock!
Is he breathing?
Jack rummages in a drawer.
Is he breathing?
Come on, honey. Get his backpack. Come on.
Sarah picks up a rucksack and she and Jack rifle through its contents.
Stay with me, Andy. Stay with me.
It's not here.
Mom, it's not here. Stay here.
Jack looks up accusingly at Cox, who stares coolly back.
Show something. He's dying. Come on.
Jack marches over to Cox.
Give it to me, please.
Do whatever you want. Give it to me, please. Please.
Cox holds up an EpiPen. Jack grabs it and drops down next to his son.
Is that really?
Jack thrusts the self-injecting syringe into the boy's leg. Cox looks on coldly. Andy stares around, wide-eyed and disoriented.
You're all right. You're okay.
It's okay. It's okay.
A smile flickers on Cox's lips.
Are you all right, big fella?
Jack turns and stares at the blonde man in utter disbelief.
Good.
Cox walks slowly away. Jack bows his head. Silhouetted against an indigo sky, the house's lights are reflected in the gently lapping waters of the bay. On a screen, jerky security camera footage shows Cox sitting down in Jack's home office chair to watch Jack fiddling with the fax machine. Jack takes screws out of the sides of the fax machine and, lifting up the main housing, reaches into its inner workings. He pulls a plastic wire coupler out of its socket. The six red wires stemming from the coupler are attached to a square rod, which Jack pulls free from the machine and puts down.
I need my daughter's MP3 player. He uses a hard drive.
He gets up and wanders out. Cox sighs impatiently. Beth, Andy and Sarah are lying in the main bed, small earphones pushed into Sarah's ears. Jack bends over her.
Honey, I need to borrow your iPod.
Will I get it back?
Sure, I promise.
She pulls the earphones off and hands the iPod to Jack. He looks at Beth and leaves.
This is the scanner head from the fax machine.
Yeah.
And you'll capture the images of the account numbers off the server screen and transfer them to this.
10,000 songs, 10,000 account codes, it doesn't know the difference. How will you run the actual file? I won't. I'll have the maintenance department in Wichita do it. But they're still just images. What are you going to do with them? I use an OCR program to convert it to data computer can use.
And then use my merge program from the CD.
That's right.
What about the money?
Then I just need access to a wire transfer terminal and you'll get your money.
Vel? It should work.
Vel smiles.
It better.
With a long, tired face, Jack turns back to his computer screen. Harry's asleep in bed. He picks up a cell phone from the bedside table.
Hello?
How'd it go?
Oh.
It's Cox.
Fine, considering. How's it going at your end?
I'll have everything finished by the time you get here.
I guess I never thought we'd pull this off.
I know. What time did your flight get in? I'll pick you up.
The electric garage door of the Stanfields' house slowly rises, revealing rain-pounded tarmac. In the house, Sarah and Beth watch through a window as the Chrysler edges out of the garage and pulls away down the drive, Jack at the wheel and Cox next to him. In an indoor car park, the grey Chrysler drives up a ramp and turns into a parking bay. Cox looks at Jack, who doesn't meet his gaze. Cox gets out of the car. Jack follows him. In Jack's office, Cox watches Janet through the glass wall.
Fire her.
She's carrying a mug.
What?
Jack steps towards Cox.
Fire Janet? Why?
I don't like the way she looks at me. Fire her.
Janet comes in.
Do you need anything else?
No, I'm good, thanks.
You're the only banker I've ever met who drinks tea.
I am?
Give us a minute, will you?
Unsettled, Janet glances at Jack as Cox ambles out through the open door. Jack slams the door shut and takes a deep breath.
Janet, I want you to pack up your stuff and go home.
What? What do you mean?
Just what I said. Pack up your stuff and go home.
Why?
You're fired.
If this is a joke, it's not funny,
Jack. No, this is not a joke. Tomorrow I'll call human resources. I'll get you a job with somebody else at the bank. Right now, I want you to just do what I said.
What are you talking about? Is this because of him?
Don't argue with me, Janet.
But, Jack, I haven't done anything wrong.
Pack up your shit and get out of here. Now.
Screw you, Jack.
She turns on her heel, leaving Jack looking troubled. At the house, Andy and Sarah are playing Monopoly on the floor of the main room. Beth's with them.
When is Daddy coming home?
The children watch as Beth gets up.
As soon as he can get them some money from the bank.
And then they'll leave?
And then they'll leave.
She rises and takes a tray into the kitchen area. Vel and Pim are watching TV. Liam grinds pepper into a pan.
Cox is going to kill you. You know that, don't you? Just like Willie.
Vel stares at her.
Willie made mistakes.
What, do you think he's going to reward you because you've been good?
Shut up.
As soon as he has the money, you'll be no more use to him.
Go back into the bedroom, Beth.
She narrows her eyes at Liam.
He has no reason to let any of you live.
She goes out. Pim snorts. At the bank, Jack and Cox stroll through the corridors of servers.
What I'm asking for isn't standard, you know.
They reach a computer terminal.
Might not do it. We might say we did it yesterday or scheduled for tomorrow or something.
Get on with it. Make it happen.
Jack takes out the rod-shaped fax machine scanner head and sellotapes it across the screen of the computer terminal. The scanner head's attached to the iPod. Jack picks up a phone receiver.
Operations.
Stacy, Jack Stanfield in Seattle.
Hi, Mr. Stanfield.
I need you to run a maintenance cert program for me. We all online accounts, largest to smallest.
Give me a sec, I'll check.
Green lettering appears on the screen.
Okay, key card.
He swipes his key card on a sensor.
There you go.
Ready to run.
Telling you. Room is changing quickly, whatever.
Figures scroll on the screen.
It's running, Stacy.
As Gary and Arlen head past towers of banked servers towards them, Jack slips off, leaving Cox at the terminal. Cox frets.
Banking today, you have to be thinking outside the box.
Oh, I understand.
Otherwise, these geeks with their laptops can sit at home and figure out ways to steal money from you.
Arlen, you lost?
Hi, Jack. No, Gary's trying to teach me something about the new technology.
Good luck.
Yeah, I told him you've been trying that for years. What are you up to?
I came down because there was a maintenance issue with one of the servers. Got the engineers coming down to work on it.
I asked to be notified about all maintenance issues. No one told me a server was down.
Well, they probably didn't realize the procedures had changed. Wichita didn't call you?
No. Who's they?
Gary walks on.
I don't know. Janet took the call.
Did you fire her this morning?
You know, Arlen, it just wasn't working out.
Seems kind of sudden.
It's been...
Jack pulls leftover tape off the screen.
It's been building for a while.
Well, care to join us? Help Gary unlock my analog brain?
I think I'd better get back to the office.
He shambles off.
I'll check with you later.
Well,
all right. You gotta understand two things. Number one...
Jack strides on. Cox steps out of the shadows and hands Jack the iPod and fax scanner head. Jack swipes his card over the sensor at the door and they head out. In the gents, Jack sits on the toilet in a cubicle, downloading information from the iPod onto a laptop. Cox paces in the adjoining cubicle. The transfer completes. Jack sticks his hand under the cubicle partition and clicks his fingers urgently. Cox hands him a CD, which Jack puts into the laptop and starts a batch compiling program. Jack looks up fearfully and listens to the newcomer, before looking back down at the computer screen where a dialogue box shows the compiling has finished. A dialogue box shows the progress of data transfer onto the CD.
He didn't wash his hands. That's why you should never eat peanuts off a bar.
Transfer finished, Jack snaps the laptop shut.
Let's go.
They leave their cubicles and stride across the brown marble floor, Jack handing the computer to Cox. Jack shoves the iPod and scan head into a bin, then thinks better of it and retrieves the iPod. Cox secretes the laptop down the back of his trousers. Beth and the kids are watching TV. Rusty the dog scratches.
Can I take his collar off?
Liam comes in.
No, honey, he needs that.
Beth, come with me, please.
Where?
Just downstairs.
Mom.
Sarah shakes her head.
It's okay, I'll be right back.
Now, Beth.
Beth gets up.
Why do you hate us so much?
I don't hate you, Sarah. I just don't care about you.
Liam escorts Beth out and hands her a piece of paper, which she reads.
I need you to make a call.
Why would I say this?
She stares uncomprehendingly at Liam.
Make him believe you.
He holds a pistol to her head and presses the phone to her right ear. Cox and Jack walk down the pale stone staircase into the main banking hall. His jowly face hardened with resolve, Jack marches past customers and heads towards a side door. He swipes his card with a cold glance back at Cox, and then pushes open the door. In a corridor, the two men stop outside a glass-walled office, where Bobby and a colleague are working at computers. Leaving Cox outside, Jack swipes himself into the office and motions for Bobby to come over. Removing headphones, Bobby gets up from his desk and joins Jack.
Mr. Stanfield, sir, why did Janet get fired? She didn't do anything.
We know what you're up to, Bobby.
What I'm up to? What do you mean?
You and Janet have made repeated attempts to access secure information.
No, we haven't. That's ridiculous.
She rolled over on you, Bobby. She gave you up.
What are you talking about, sir?
Sit down.
Sit down.
Bobby mouths silent protestations as he sinks down onto a chair. Jack strides over to Bobby's computer. Gary inserts his keycard into a slot on his desk keyboard and removes it. His suit jacket off, he types the word Stanfield into a search box. Jack's picture and fingerprint appear on the screen. Cox looks into the office where Jack is feverishly at work on Bobby's computer. A line of text appears on the screen reading, "Transfer script executing. Please wait." Two columns then appear, one showing different accounts from where money is being debited, and the other showing an account whose balance is rapidly increasing. Jack looks up at Cox and gives a slight but firm nod of his head. Gary brings up a list of computer terminals at which Jack has been working. He scrolls to the bottom of the list and clicks on the last entry, Wire Transfer Room, Transfer Terminal 12. He gets up, pulls his dark blue suit jacket off the back of his chair and walks off. On Bobby's computer, the receiving account in a bank in the Cayman Islands now has a balance of over $10 million. Jack spots Bobby's cell phone on the desk. Checking that Bobby's not watching, Jack picks up the phone and turns the camera on. He takes a picture of the computer screen and then inspects his handiwork, wincing as he sees his reflection on the photo. He drops the phone into his jacket pocket. Bobby looks across at Jack and then gets up. Jack stands and calmly hands the phone to the young, dark-haired man.
We'll be in touch, Bobby.
Hello?
Jack walks out. Cox is on his phone.
It's done.
Fellas, the money there? Okay, good.
I've done everything you want. When do I get my family back?
We have some tidying up to do.
Jack presses his lips together angrily and hurries after Cox. Gary strides down the corridor towards the wire transfer room. He puts his finger on a fingerprint scanner attached to the door. A blue light comes on, and he pushes the door open. Bobby gets to his feet.
Sir, I just wanted to say regards to you.
Gary holds up his hand, asks him something, then sits at a computer. Cox and Jack are in the surveillance office.
There are hidden cameras in all the public areas, some of the more sensitive areas on the secure floors.
So you can see the whole bank from here?
These are archive files.
91 cameras running on 20 screens.
Wow, I bet you don't watch much TV when you get home.
I don't even have one.
Jack drops a mug.
Sorry. I got it. Sorry.
As the security officer goes to get a cloth, Jack types urgently on a keyboard, just as urgently as Gary, who brings up the list of terminals that Jack's used again. He looks at the last entry, Video Security Center. Jack chooses an option in a dialog box to delete all video logs. He types in his password. The security officer comes back and starts to mop up the mess.
Well, at least it didn't end up in the keyboard.
Right.
Jack hits a key to execute his command.
Better get out of here before we completely screw things up.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Cox shakes hands with the security officer as he leaves. Elevator doors open and Gary steps out. He places an index finger on another door lock scanner and hurries into the video surveillance office.
Where's Jack Stanfield?
He just left.
What was he doing in here?
Making one hell of a mess.
What the hell? What's wrong?
All the camera files have been deleted.
Gary storms out. In his own office, Jack inserts a CD into his computer. It brings up an email message reading, Hi, Arlen. Could you have a look at this and get back to me? Thanks, Jack.
What is this?
Just press send.
Jack moves the mouse and clicks on the send button. He turns to look anxiously at Cox.
Now there's no network, no account details, no trace of the 100 million. Can I have the disc, please?
Jack ejects it.
Vel has a real talent for being distracted. Do you not think?
Cox puts the disc into his inside jacket pocket.
See you at the house, Jack.
He strolls out with a smile, leaving Jack bewildered. Gary marches in.
Jack, what's going on? What are you up to?
I haven't got time for this now.
You're gonna make time. You're gonna stay right here and explain to me what you've been doing in areas you're not supposed to be in.
No, I'm not.
He forces Gary aside.
Stanfield, the network. Tell him.
What is it?
The network just crashed.
The whole floor?
Not the whole building.
Jack jogs into the car park, fishing his keys from his jacket pocket. He clicks the remote button and climbs quickly into his car.
Anfield!
Gary runs up to the car as Jack reverses. He pounds on the car's boot, but Jack drives off.
Jack! Stop right there! Jack!
Tearing down a flight of steps to the next level, Gary jumps in front of the car and Jack slams on the brakes.
Get out of the car, Jack!
Nuts.
You're nuts!
Get away from the car!
Gary, get the phone! The
message! Jack grabs Gary and the two men tussle on the bonnet of the car, a security guard watching on impotently. Jack throws Gary to the ground, gets back into the driver's seat, reverses and then speeds off, smashing through the exit barrier.
Call the police!
The guard gets on his radio. Headlights glaring through the rain, the Chrysler speeds down the driveway and comes to a halt outside the house. Jack looks around, stunned and confused. He charges into the house.
Beth!
Taking two wooden steps at a time, he hurries towards the kitchen.
Beth!
He glances through a rain-streaked window and then dashes through the kitchen area into the open-plan main room. Jack looks around the neat and tidy room, then about turns and walks into Andy's bedroom. There's no sign of anybody. His face drawn, he stares at the empty bed, then turns away. Outside, the rain still teems down. Jack sits on a chair in the main room, looking out through the wall of windows. Aware of something behind him, he turns round and gets up. Liam's in the kitchen, watching him.
Where are they? Where's my family?
Liam answers his phone.
Yeah, we're leaving now. I'll meet you when I'm done.
He has a submachine gun.
Yeah, we'll do. Cox says goodbye.
Are they alive? Just tell me that. Are they alive?
Jack steps up.
Come on, man.
We're leaving now, Jack.
Why should I go with you? Just kill me here. Why should I make it easy?
Yourself? There's a chance you might be able to help them. Now, let's go.
Jack pushes him away and grabs a blender jug. The gun fires as Jack smashes the jug down on Liam's head. The bullets hit a glass-fronted cupboard. Jack slugs Liam's head a third time. Liam collapses. Jack staggers and supports himself against the wall, staring dazedly at the floor. He drops the jug. Liam lies motionless, his head oozing blood. Jack spots Liam's cell phone on the floor and picks it up. Outside, in the pouring rain, Jack throws the submachine gun into the boot of his car and gets behind the wheel. The car speeds off up the drive. On the highway, Jack holds Liam's silver clam-style cell phone against the wheel, looking fretfully between it and the road. He flips up the lid and dials a number. A phone rings next to a computer screen displaying an aquarium screensaver.
Hi, it's Harry. Leave a message.
Harry. Jesus, Harry, where are you?
I'm in trouble. Real trouble. I need to talk to you. Call me. No, you can't call me yourself. Listen.
Jack flips shut the phone, his face trembling. Later, Jack sits in his car on a dark street. Rivulets of shining rainwater stream down the windows. He looks over at a smart apartment building across the street. A yellow cab pulls up, and a couple get out and head towards the building.
Yeah, huh?
The man opens the door. Jack darts up.
What a night. Oh, it is Seattle.
He follows the couple inside. Jack heads into a narrow emergency stairwell. He makes his way upstairs and pushes open a door onto the roof. Hurrying along the roof, he pulls up the collar of his dark grey suit jacket. Reaching a metal stepladder on the side of a brick wall, he makes his way down onto a lower level. Gingerly, he walks towards the edge of the roof and looks down onto a balcony. Far below, tiny cars drive along a wide Seattle street. Holding tightly to the edge of the roof, he lowers himself onto a ledge and jumps down onto the balcony. He lands hard, knocking over a metal chair. Pushing the chair back into place, he heads over to a set of patio doors and goes inside. Jack walks carefully towards a black-topped bar counter in the stylish, high-ceiling department. He picks up a small yellow towel from the end of the bar, which he uses to mop his hair, face and hands, before wandering over to a desk and slumping down in the chair. The computer screen in front of him displays the aquarium. He pushes the button on an answering machine and moves the mouse to activate the computer. He types in a search for Cox. Some files are found, but demand a password.
Harry. Jesus, Harry, where are you? I'm in trouble. I'm in real trouble. I need to talk to you. Call me. No, you can't. You can't call me myself. There, listen.
Hi, Mr. Chappell. This is Dr. Hayes' office confirming your 8 a.m. appointment Monday, so we'll see you then. Thank you. Bye-bye. Harry, I did it. I finally left him. God, I love you so much. I'm afraid. Get out of there, okay? Come as soon as you can.
Jack gulps.
I love you.
Harry, it's Eric at Redline. I found a guy who's selling those Porsche 356 parts.
The door opens. Jack scoots into another room.
Yeah, come on. Thank you.
Peering out, Jack sees Harry.
Wow, what a place. Yeah, I wanted something sort of Dean Martin-ish. You know what I mean?
Well, you nailed it.
Now, you know, I had my doubts, but after our meeting, I could tell Jack was definitely interested. And the timing was perfect. Without the merger, Jack would never consider leaving the bank and starting up on his own. How about a beer?
No, I'm good, thanks.
Once Jack gets his teeth into it, there'll be no stopping him. And thanks for pulling that proposal together so fast.
You know, I think I will have that beer.
You bet.
As Harry turns, Cox shoots him in the back of the head. Jack presses himself against the wall. The door closes. Jack peeps out from the side room and then races across to Harry's limp body spread out on the floor by the bar. Jack presses his fingers into Harry's bloodied neck. Jack inspects the blood on his fingers in horror. He reaches forward to pick up a silver revolver. He stares at it, aghast. Jack tears out of the apartment and down the emergency stairs. In the foyer, the concierge is at his desk on the phone.
Sure it wasn't the TV, Mrs. Levy? There's a lot of shooting on the...
No, it wasn't the damn TV. I'm telling you, the guy had a gun.
Okay, well, what did the guy look like?
He was wearing a great suit.
His eyes widen as a disheveled Jack sprints breathlessly past him and out of the building. The concierge dials a number. Jack's car's blocked in by a rubbish truck. He runs after a yellow cab. The cab comes to a stop in a road opposite some shops. Jack climbs out. Dashes across the rain-swept road and heads in through a doorway between shop fronts. He runs up a set of narrow stairs coming out onto the landing of a seedy apartment block. He strides down the landing and hammers on the door of 119.
Janet?
An Oriental woman.
Janet.
Ready? Ne wan binga?
Janet Stone.
She points to 120.
Janet!
He forces open the door, breaking the chain, and grabs Janet, cupping his right hand across her mouth and dragging her down with him into an armchair.
The man was in my office. He's right from Redmond. He's a bank robber. He's got Beth and the kids.
He's gonna kill him. I may be dead already. I need your help. Do you understand me? I need your help to try and save them.
She nods.
Don't scream.
Slowly, he removes his hand. She gets up and turns to face him, flustered and confused.
Hurry. Shouldn't we call the police?
Agitated, he gets up and turns off the stereo.
No, please.
What about Harry?
He faces her forlornly.
Harry's dead.
Jesus.
She sinks down onto a settee. Jack sits down.
I was at Harry's apartment when Cox or Redmond, whatever his name is, shot him. People there saw me with a gun in my hand. There's a dead man in my house by the time I explained to the police. Beth and the kids could be dead.
God.
I need you to help me find Bobby.
Bobby? Why?
I need his cell phone. I used his phone to photograph some account code numbers. I've got to have it to get the money back. Can you help me?
Yeah, I'll find his number.
Jack leans back in his seat. Rubbing his right hand, he winces. A bull-nosed Mack truck thunders past a fast food restaurant. Belle, carrying a food bag, hurries across the car park to the panel van. Belle climbs into the passenger seat next to Pim. Cox pulls up in a silver car.
Everything all right?
Yeah, did you talk to Liam?
No, not yet.
Where the hell is he, man?
Let's go.
Now?
Yeah, now!
Cox drives off. Pim turns to look in the back of the van.
You guys need to go to the washroom?
Beth, the kids, and the dog.
I'll say I didn't ask.
They're bound and gagged with tape. Cox makes a call. Jack wakes up.
Jack. I found Bobby.
Great.
He pulls out Liam's cell phone.
It's Cox.
Are you gonna answer?
I'm not ready to talk to him yet. I need Bobby's cell phone first. And we'll need your laptop.
No problem.
And can we use your car?
Problem.
Pop it! Pop it! Pop the joint!
In a dark alley.
Hold on!
Jack pushes Janet's relic of a car, then jumps in.
Keep the gas up.
The pale green saloon turns out onto a wet street. Janet stares intently ahead, her hands firmly gripping the thin, knobbly steering wheel. Jack stares into the distance, resting his elbow on the windowsill, fingering his lips.
I can't believe Harry's dead. Was he involved with Cox?
No. No, Harry thought he was a businessman.
But didn't Harry introduce you to Cox?
No. Investment thing is just a scam. Cox was using Harry to get next to me. Harry didn't know anything about the robbery. Cox killed him with my gun to make it look as if I shot him in a jealous rage over Beth.
Harry and Beth? Give me a break.
Plain enough. Message from Beth on Harry's answering machine.
His lips quiver as he looks away from her.
Saying she... was leaving me. I also found some encrypted files on his computer. I'm sure they tie him and me together in the robbery. Cox had it all planned out. Even the gambling debts. We hatched this plan to rob the bank. Then I find out my buddy is sleeping with my wife. After the robbery, I go to his apartment. I kill him and I disappear with the money forever.
Forever as in dead?
Jack gazes sternly ahead.
Killed the man who was supposed to kill me.
Her brows slightly furrowed, Janet looks slowly away from him to face ahead in solemn introspection. Streaks of liquid silver flash into the old car's headlights as the rain hammers down. Janet turns the car into a quiet side street, does a U-turn, and pulls over.
Be right back.
Janet gets out and hurries into a darkened building. Inside, Bobby's on stage playing electric guitar to a large crowd of dancing worshippers. Janet stares. In the car, Jack fishes Liam's phone from his jacket pocket. He checks the display and puts it away. Janet goes up on stage.
What are you doing?
I didn't tell Jack any of that stuff.
Why did he say you did?
I don't know. I'm sorry about that. Can I borrow your cell phone? Your cell phone, do you have it? Can I borrow it?
He hands it to her.
Thanks.
Confused, he stares after her. In the car.
Here.
Work.
Jack pulls out the phone's memory card and slides it into a slot on the side of Janet's laptop. Janet watches anxiously as Jack opens a folder. The photo he took is there.
Here we go.
Now what?
Just need to find a wire transfer terminal.
Where are we going to find a bank open at this hour?
Luggage trolleys are wheeled across a road. Janet pulls over in the drop-off zone.
Jack, you look like a bank robber.
She helps him straighten his tie and collar.
Keep the water running.
Good luck.
As he gets out, Liam's phone rings. He checks the display and then pockets the phone before heading into the brightly lit terminal building. Clutching the laptop to his side, Jack walks through the baggage hall, checking his watch. He stops and loiters nervously by an illuminated advertising sign, watching as a woman opens the glass door of the Landrock Pacific Bank to let two colleagues out.
We'll see you in the morning.
The woman turns away. Jack runs up.
I'm sorry, we're closed.
Jack holds up his pass. The woman inspects it through the glass, then opens the door.
I need to get on your wire transfer terminal.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sorry. We usually don't have a supervisor here this late, but you can use this one.
Thank you.
She spots the gun in his trousers.
The money is put away.
It's not about the money. Sit down, sir.
Terrified, she sits.
I'm not going to hurt you.
Jack opens the laptop.
9916.
He types account numbers into the transfer terminal. The details of a Cayman Islands account are displayed. The account contains $20 million. Jack hits the return key. The 20 million becomes zero. Jack pulls out Liam's cell phone. The bank employee swallows hard as she watches him make a call. Cox is driving.
Liam, where have you been?
Change of plans, asshole.
Jack, where are you?
At a bank. I just hacked into your Cayman Island accounts.
That's impossible.
You think so?
I have your account details. You just lost 20 million.
Bullshit.
Cox stops at the side of an unlit country road. The panel van pulls up behind him. Discreetly, the bank employee slides a foot towards a button on the floor. Cox walks up to the van.
What's going on?
Check the accounts.
What for?
Can you check the accounts, please?
Yeah.
Bell puts on his glasses and opens his laptop. In the bank, Jack stabs at the return key again.
There goes another 20 million.
Come on.
I'm doing it as fast as I can. We're down 40 million.
Now you know what it feels like to lose what you love.
Bell stares at his screen.
Another account just cleared.
That was for Harry.
Your family are dead, you hear me? They are dead!
For all I know, they're dead already.
Can't get another one!
You're down to your last 20 million.
Cox slides open the side door of the van and rips the tape from Beth's mouth. He hauls her from the van.
Torture husband.
Jack, I love you. Do whatever you can to save the children.
I am, baby. I love you too.
Put the money back or I'll put a bullet through her head.
You do anything to her or my children and you don't get a dime.
It's all gone.
Jack, just calm down. If you calm down, we can
you
talk.
You get the money when I get my family. Tomorrow morning when the bank's open, I'll let you know where.
Yeah, I'll be there.
You hear me?
I'll be there, just...
And don't bother calling me, because I've got nothing to say to you.
The bank employee's face falls.
You need to get out of here.
What?
I pushed the sound alarm.
When?
A couple of minutes ago. I'm sorry.
At the roadside...
I thought Liam was going to take care of him, man.
Put the woman back in the van.
How are you going to give me my... Put her back in the van!
Pim throws Beth down onto the floor of the van.
Shut up!
A police car stops behind Janet's car. An officer walks over.
Shit.
He raps on the window. Police officers march through the baggage hall, past Jack, who's standing in a crowd of others waiting for luggage. At the car...
Move it!
Second. Here he is.
Get out of here!
Jack gets in and Janet drives away.
What happened?
They're alive.
Thank God.
Just about everything on Cox has agreed. I got the money. So I still got a chance.
What are you gonna do?
I'm gonna meet Cox at the bank in the morning.
How are you gonna get in?
I can't, you can.
You fired me, remember? I don't have a pass.
He turns from her in dismay. Suddenly, his eyes widen.
Barking. Jesus. Barking.
Jack?
What? Pull over. Pull over.
Janet pulls over onto a piece of disused land under a concrete bridge. Jack leaps out and puts the laptop on the roof of the car.
Jack, what are you doing?
I heard Rusty barking. He's with Beth and the kids in the van.
So?
He's got this GPS. He's got this GPS thing.
You're not making any sense.
He was running away all the time. So we got on a collar with a GPS locator. It's from this website. He's still got it on.
Jack signs into the PetNav website. A map appears.
Got him. There they are.
He points to a flashing red dot.
What are they doing? Driving out of town.
Why is he doing that? Didn't he say he would meet you here?
He hands the laptop to Janet.
Here. Get in the car.
What are you doing?
I'm gonna find my dog.
Jack climbs behind the wheel. Janet gets into the passenger seat with the computer on her lap. They roar away out onto the main road. In the van.
Can you shut the dog up?
You know, you're never going to get that money now. If you turn around and take us back, my husband can give you whatever you want. You can split it between the two of you.
Shut the damn dog up!
Jack and Janet speed across a bridge. Jack's tired eyes search the road ahead. Janet eyes him nervously. The panel van follows Cox's silver SUV through a small town. Janet's car drifts onto the wrong side of the road. Jack's head falls forward. His eyes spring open.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay, yeah.
You want me to drive?
No, I'm fine. Where are they now?
She looks at the screen.
They're still on the tube.
Janet's car speeds through the small town. The silver SUV and the panel van head up a hill and pass alongside a lake, its calm waters reflecting the pale golds of early morning sun. In the back of the van, Beth looks down at her two children, their mouths still taped shut. The two vehicles turn off the tarmac road and onto a track, winding its way up the side of a hill. In Janet's car...
I just turned off the road. There's nothing on this map except a big lake and some railroad tracks.
How far?
20 miles.
Where the hell are they going?
In the back of the van...
Shut up. Shut your goddamn dog up. I swear to God.
It's okay, Rusty. Come here, Rusty. Come here.
Shut up!
They reach railway lines.
That's it! Avoid your...
Pim throws the dog out.
You're doing no, Rusty!
Shut up and get going, Jack!
Beth bursts into tears.
Sorry, baby.
You're right.
Pim drives across the railway lines. Andy sobs uncontrollably. The two vehicles bounce along a dusty track beside the railway line. A freight train lumbers past them. The vehicles drive through a small complex of weatherboarded outbuildings and stop at a dilapidated house, its wooden veranda overlooking the shimmering lake. Cox leads the others into the gloomy house.
Put them in the back room.
Maybe we should just forget it. Let them all go.
Maybe you should do your job and put him in the back room.
Jack drives Janet's car across the railway tracks and turns down along the dusty track.
Why would he bring them all the way out here?
I don't think he was planning on leaving anyone alive.
Janet looks sickened. In the dingy back room of the house, Andy starts to struggle for breath. Sarah nudges Beth.
Oh, my
hey.
God. Come here. It's all right.
Hey.
Oh, come on, he can't breathe.
I don't give a rat's ass. I'm sick of you people.
Pim strolls out. Fel looks round.
Please help us.
Fel looks down at Andy, who stares pleadingly up at him. After a moment's thought, Fel crouches and removes the tape from the children's mouths.
We need to exchange you for the money, and then we'll let you go. Okay?
He turns to Beth.
You'll be all right.
Thank you.
He smiles thinly and gets up. Janet and Jack bump along the track. Janet stares at her laptop screen and furrows her brow.
They're slowing down.
Jack glances at the screen, then looks ahead. Rusty's on the track ahead, walking away from them. Jack stops the car behind the dog and gets out.
Rusty!
The terrier turns.
Rusty. Come here, Rusty. It's okay.
Jack picks him up.
Where are they, Rusty? Where have they gone? Where's Andy?
He walks on to the brow of a hill and looks down on the lake.
There's a house down there by the lake. I see Beth's car. Have you got a cell phone?
Yeah.
Call the police.
Shouldn't we just wait here for the police?
No. I can't. I can't wait. Thanks for everything. You got your job back.
As Jack gets back into the car, Janet pulls out her cell phone and dials a number, holding Rusty in her other hand. Jack drives down the hill and into a wooded area of autumnal trees. He gets out and, crouching low, treads carefully along a path leading through the undergrowth. He squats down by a mature silver birch tree, his dark red tie pulled away from his collar and dangling down his grubby white shirt. He stares across a narrow inlet towards the house, some of its windows covered in plastic sheeting. Pim and Cox are on the veranda.
Will he call? Think he'll just give us some money, no police?
He knows I'll kill his family if he doesn't.
Cox turns to look at Pim.
I just need to up the ante a little.
Cox marches into the house and towards the back room. He grabs Sarah.
No, please, what are you doing?
Beth lunges at him.
Stop it!
He punches her. Vel grabs Cox.
Shut up! Why are you doing this?
Letting go of Sarah, Cox headbutts Vel. Sarah flees out of the house. Cox pulls his gun and shoots Vel. Jack double takes as he sees his daughter charging to a barn. Pim hurries after the girl, whose arms are still tied behind her back. In his race to get up, Jack trips and falls. Scrambling to his feet, he races back to the car. In the barn.
Where are you at, sweetie? You wanna play? Wanna go? Hello.
He uses the light on his submachine gun to peer into the gloom, amongst the rusting pieces of farm machinery. Sarah's pressed up against an old tractor. Gun in hand, Jack drives furiously towards the house, the car lurching across a wooden bridge. Sarah makes a run for it out through a side door. She runs out in front of the car. Pim fires at it. Jack drives at him, smashing him into the bonnet and crashing into a fuel store. The roof collapses and a fireball engulfs the car. Jack struggles desperately with the door handle.
Help! Right
here! Come on!
In the house, Cox has hold of Andy and a gun at Beth. Jack manages to shoulder his door open. He reaches back to get his gun.
Run, Sarah! Run and hide!
She runs off.
Yeah!
The gun's too hot and Jack leaves it. Cox rips down the sheeting across a window and looks out as the car explodes. Jack's crouched under the window. Jack climbs a painter's scaffold up onto the wooden shingled roof. Cox manhandles Andy and Beth upstairs. Scrambling across the roof to a sheeted window, Jack peers in and watches them reach the landing. Jack bursts through the window, landing on top of Cox. As the men struggle, Beth kicks Cox's gun away. Both men stagger to their feet. Cox slams Jack into the banisters and throws him downstairs. His dirty face smeared with blood, Jack pushes himself up. But Cox is waiting and lands a hard blow to his left cheek. Jack loses his balance and falls halfway through a slatted wall. Cox kicks him in the stomach. Jack lands on the floor of the back room and Cox climbs through the hole after him, spitting blood from his mouth before landing another hard kick. They both dive for the submachine gun under Vel's body. they tussle, the floor above them erupts in a shower of splinters, narrowly missing Beth. Cox gains control of the gun, but the cartridges run out, and as he fiddles with it, Jack pulls him over, and the two roll onto the floor of the front room, Jack on top. Jack slams Cox's head onto the floor. Cox manages to push Jack away and get hold of his foot. Jack careers backwards, smashing through wooden planks on a trestle. Cox pins him to a wall. Beth and Andy race downstairs and outside. Cox hurls Jack through a window, then walks out through the veranda door. Jack slams his foot into Cox's shin, bringing him down. Jack lands a punch on Cox and manages to get his arm round his neck. Cox heaves himself up, elbowing Jack and turning round. Jack thumps Cox in the stomach, but Cox pushes him into a window. Jack throws Cox against the veranda railings and goes to take a punch. Cox dodges and throws a swift blow, sending Jack tumbling over the railings and into a pit. He lands face down. Cox jumps onto his back. Cox grabs hold of Jack's tie and starts to pull from behind. Jack struggles to his feet and slams his elbow into Cox before trying to grab the long handle of an implement left in the pit. Lifting the pickaxe, he swings it behind his back. Cox's eyes glaze as the pickaxe embeds itself in his lower back. With a final pained look at Jack, Cox slumps forward into the pit. Stunned, Jack stares down at Cox's motionless form before shakily turning round.
Beth! Beth!
Beth walks from behind a shed.
Jack! Beth!
Jack claws himself out of the pit.
Jack!
Jack pulls himself around the corner of the veranda, and hanging onto the railings for support, he stares at his wife and children in joyful disbelief. Beth hurries over to him, and the two embrace, wrapping their arms tightly around one another. Andy and Sarah stand at a distance, watching. Up on the track, Janet sits anxiously by a wall, with Rusty on her lap. Rusty leaps up and gallops off down the track. Janet stands and stares, incredulous, as she watches Jack and Beth, flanked by their two children, slowly walk up over the brow of the hill. Janet beams. Andy bends down to Rusty. Jack gives Janet a long and grateful look, and then turns to his family. ITFC audio description by Mark Leavesley, John Walskill, and James O'Hara was voiced by Mark Leavesley.